Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 3, and we are getting ready for the Steelers' first preseason game coming up just 4 days from now. It'll be Friday again at Heinz Field. And Dave, you know, the Steelers got through kind of the grind part of the schedule. They get today off being Monday, and then the Lions come to town, and they get practices Tuesday and Wednesday with the Lions. It'll be great to see another colored jersey out there on the field, somebody else to go against who's not knowing exactly the plays you're calling and the defensive schemes you're running. So that'll be a positive. They'll do that Tuesday and Wednesday, have a walkthrough Thursday morning, and head down to Pittsburgh, have the game Friday, and then we're off and running kind of from here to there to kind of get down to 75 and then get down to 53. And then still a month away. It's not right around the corner. It's September 12th, that Monday night game, but getting closer, obviously, by the day.
Yeah, I bet these guys really look forward to hitting somebody other than their own teammates for a change. So it'll be interesting to see if a guy like Eric Ebron, the tight end for the Lions, I was really hopeful. Looking forward to reading the reports of how they do covering, you know, a tight end such as himself. But he suffered some sort of injury. I guess on the surface it doesn't seem long-term, but it might be enough to keep him out of that practice. But a huge week indeed for the Steelers. And then obviously ending it with their first preseason game against the Lions, which, boy, there's so many guys that I can't wait to see for the first time, David.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they'll get out there and get to do things. And before we get into that, no football last night. We thought we had our last weekend without football this past weekend, but wasn't the case with the Hall of Fame game. And, Dave, you know, a little bit of irony on Twitter is everybody talks about how, you know, preseason football is meaningless and they don't care to watch it. And yet somebody somewhere is watching it because the numbers are always outstanding. And there were a lot of people on Twitter last night. From bemused to irate is how I would describe the reaction, because some paint was used on the field that made the field unplayable. Obviously, Steeler fans remember last year that was a game where, you know, you don't know how directly a field contributed to an injury, but certainly Sean Sweesum had a non-contact injury in that game that looks like it probably has ended his career. It's never been known as a good field. I think they did replace that field this past year, but somebody put some paint, as you said, how do you find the wrong kind of paint down there to put down basically what turned into concrete, congealed, and, you know, ended up no game to watch last night.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder how something like that happens. And I think the reports are that Tom Benson donated the old surface out of the Superdome to go in there. So they were going to have, I guess, to them, a new playing surface, a hand-me-down, if you will. And then somebody used the wrong paint on it. I don't know. That must have been the one marked in the Acme. Remember the old Bugs Bunny cartoons? Roadrunner and
Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, where everything came from Acme. You know, that ran through my head. Now, I haven't read, you know, I've read just the kind of the surface stuff on there, you know, related to that. Wouldn't you think that the NFL, now look, to my understanding, that, you know, you have the Hall of Fame ceremony there in the stadium. Obviously, they have to do the change over and put the field down after that's over. Supposedly, they had a concert, a country, forget who it was exactly, performed there as well, too. But wouldn't you think, and maybe they did, wouldn't you think you would bring in, being all the problems that you've had or with players being uncomfortable with the playing conditions there, that you'd bring in the league's head of I don't know, what do you call it, field preparation or whatnot to make sure something like that goes off without a hitch?
Well, Dave, the answer is I'm sure they had somebody who was responsible for that, who's professional in their job, and somebody made a mistake with the paint. So, look, it's a seemingly needless mistake that, you know, obviously shouldn't happen. They've spent a lot of money refurbishing that stadium. I've never been there, so I can't comment on the quality of kind of the environment or the field itself. Having a synthetic surface obviously makes it a lot easier for them in terms of maintenance on a field that's not used very often to make sure that it's okay. Somebody made a mistake. I don't think it's a big deal. It's unfortunate for a couple of guys getting some reps, and probably those guys were ready to go. I mean, they're there. If they've flown in for this and then to not play, that's probably disappointing. They'll have a laugh about it and move on. I mean, you know, there's some people this morning who are talking about it like a national crime. That might be overstating it a little bit. Even Lewis Riddick said, you know, I can't believe this wasn't postponed. I mean, it was canceled. Well, I mean, it's Sunday night. Most teams got games coming up, you know, Friday or Saturday, so they're not gonna come back and play it this afternoon or tonight or something like that. So, just a nature of the schedule and on you go. But I'm sure there were a lot of people. Well, I'll tell you, if there were a lot of people who ended up having to watch the Olympics instead of football that wasn't played, they got quite a show from the U.S. men's 4x100 swim team with Michael Phelps and the women's gymnasts last night. So hopefully at least they were entertained if they watched some sports instead.
That wasn't me. I was pretty bummed out. I was looking forward to seeing the game, so I just went on to do some other work related to the site and stuff. Maybe I'll catch up with some Olympic stuff maybe later today, being as how it's a lighter day with the Steelers off.
Who does that mean kicks off the NFL season? I mean, does anybody kick off before the Steelers at 7 o'clock on Friday night?
That is a great question, and if you keep talking, I'll give you an answer.
I'm guessing that nobody plays on Thursday, so I'm guessing the Steelers are going to kick off the NFL season with, you know, 10 other teams.
It looks like Thursday night, the 11th, Redskins, Falcons. There's a couple of games Thursday, quite a few, actually.
Thursday. So I was wrong. All right, so we do – We only got three more days without football, so you got that.
There you go. And in fact, you know, let's start off going this way, being as how the first game, it looks like on the schedule, is Redskins versus Falcons. I mentioned a few weeks ago on the podcast for people to kind of keep an eye on what's going on down in Atlanta, and you know, I don't want this to turn into a Falcons Depot or a podcast or what have you, but several might remember C.J. Goodwin, the young wide receiver that was in camp with the Steelers the last couple of years, obviously was the one that Mel Blunt what's the right
recommended
word?
Recommended. He was a local kid out of Cal U, which is right around the corner.
And he you know, good sized kid with good ball skills and all, and obviously didn't play a lot in college, didn't have a lot of experience. The Steelers, I seem to remember that Goodwin suffered an injury. I can't remember if it was in the Hall of Fame game against Minnesota or maybe the game a couple weeks or the week later against Jacksonville, putting behind the eight ball. He was ultimately cut. The Falcons signed him during the offseason and turned him into a cornerback. And some of the early offseason reports were like, hey, this kid's taking real good to this position switch, and now that's carried over, it appears, into training camp. Has made a couple of interceptions for them. And I only bring this up because we constantly talking about the Steelers and all the failed draft picks they've had at cornerback, and now you have a guy like Cinquez Golson going down injured with a Liz Frank injury. You have a rookie first round draft pick in Artie Burns that's taken his lumps obviously during his first training camp with the team. People are going to be irate if Goodwin turns into much of anything, you know, with the Falcons. But it's definitely a fun kind of side story to watch outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's a good catch. I was, you know, thinking last year, I have to say, I was surprised he didn't make the practice squad and one with the team, because You knew he was a really good athlete and kind of a, you know, a long arm kind of guy, lanky kind of guy. And so the idea, you know, creative idea by the Falcons. We'll see where it goes. So something to keep an eye on. Dave, in terms of the injury situation with the Steelers, generally pretty good here. We've seen Bud Dupree and Arthur Burns have both missed some time, more than you would like for young guys. Any time is more than you would like for young guys. Looks like Bud Dupree is expected to be ready to go tomorrow when the Steelers and the Lions get ready. Less sure about Artie Burns. Level of concern on these types of things?
Yeah, you know how I love to speculate about groins. I won't do that with Bud Dupree, but there was a report yesterday by, I believe it was Chris Bradford or Chris Mueller, one of those guys from the Beaver County Times, stating it was a bruised groin. And evidently he was able, he's been able to get some work in on the side, and he's hoping to be ready by the time the Lions come to St. Vincent College to take part in those couple of scrimmages, and hopefully he makes it back to play in the preseason game. Obviously, that's one guy that, you know, a lot of people. The early word, of course, is there's been several reports now that the Steelers plan on playing Dupree and Jarvis Jones quite a bit. Hopefully. You know, not having to rotate those guys out. And a guy like Dupree, who had 4 sacks during the first 8 games last year, admittedly and probably not surprisingly hit the rookie wall in the second half of the season. A guy that you got a first round draft pick in him much in the same way that you do Jarvis Jones. You really want to see a lot of development from him as a pass rusher this year. And on top of it, you keep your fingers crossed that Jarvis Jones, this motivation of him not having his fifth year option picked up, supposedly a lot healthier than he was during his first 3 years, will pay off. So injury wise obviously you have the Golson thing that's unfortunate, but on the surface, knock on wood, this seems to be a healthy team through the first half of training camp.
Yeah, that is the positive. These guys are going to go into these practices and hopefully game against the Lions relatively healthy, and guys get their reps and kind of move from there and see what happens. We've seen kind of continued turnover in the back 5 spots of the roster as the Steelers kind of work through guys, and people probably don't remember that just 3 or 4 years ago, believe it or not, teams were able to get through training camp with 80 guys, but they expanded that roster to 90 guys, and so now they won't leave a roster spot open for 10 minutes. I mean, they'll bring in a new guy if somebody's injured, or they'll cut somebody and find somebody off the waiver wire to make sure they have enough guys to go through all the reps that they're going through. And, of course, one of the things about the Steelers is, as every national guy who's come through Latrobe has told you, they are much more physical than virtually any team in the NFL, maybe certainly than any team in the NFL, the way they conduct their preseason. And this is – Mike has not directly said this, but this is a full function of him going 8-8 in back-to-back seasons. And just what you heard about the defensive backs this year, what's the point of doing things exactly the same or bringing back in the defensive backs, bringing back the exact same people and expecting a lot of change when you have guys that aren't just kind of rookies who are fresh off the boat, so to speak. And so Mike instituted, a different kind of preseason where there's a lot more tackling. You go back to those Steeler teams, look, not that every team doesn't miss tackles, but you think about those 8-8 seasons, and I won't forget, Dave, the game in London against the Vikings where it was just, you felt like they couldn't make a tackle for their lives. And so it's a different camp, and you see this and to get, I guess what it tells you is a lot of times guys get hurt in non-contact plays, whether you go back to Jordy Nelson against the Steelers last year, tearing up his knee, or the Sanquez Golson this year. You're out there. You got 90 guys. You're going to be running around, and it can happen hitting, and it can happen not hitting. And so they've decided this is the way to go, and I think it's probably certainly been effective for them.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about, I've been meaning to ask Alex about this nightly in the recap podcast that we're doing. What do you think about those robots that are out there? Have you got to see them much?
I have not. You know what? I haven't seen them, and I asked the same question because I thought maybe I was missing them. They have not been visible in practice when I've been out there. They've been doing things with, you know, so many positional drills and guys working with each other and 11-on-11 stuff, a lot of 11-on-11 stuff, goal line stuff, seven shot stuff. And that this has not been a factor in camp. And I don't know how much it was in the OTAs, but really it was a big story coming in that has been a non-story.
Supposedly that thing runs a 4.5 40.
That thing's moving.
That thing's booking it, and I think one Twitter post I saw, it survived a Dan McCullers pouncing on, and just, you know, look, anything they can do to improve the tackling with this defense, right? I mean, because even though we've supposedly these have been more physical practices over the years, this Steelers defense last year wasn't a great tackling team, right? I mean, you had Lawrence Timmons miss a career high. You had a guy like Will Allen, who obviously isn't with the team right now, miss tackles. You had a guy like Antoine Blake, who missed a lot of tackles last year. This team can save themselves a lot of yards after contact and a lot of yards after the catch by just wrapping up this year.
Yeah, look, it's a key component of the game, which with all the stuff that's been negotiated in the CBA and the lack of padded practices once the season starts. Look, I specifically asked Mike about this. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, just saying, you know, are you able to still work on technique, and are you able to still work on, you know, tackling and trying to get things done, even though you're not physically doing it and bringing guys to the ground? And he said, yeah, we do. We work on it every single day, making sure guys are good in pre-snap, making sure guys are in the right position as the play is going on, making sure their technique is set. I mean, he had a very, very kind of expansive, detailed answer to that question. And, he didn't bristle at the question. He didn't take offense to it. But clearly it is something. And look, because of the times of things, I don't get to many practices to see specifically what goes on during the season. But it is something that, you know, it's as you might imagine, it is a monstrously important focus for what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you're bringing in other teams now. Now, obviously, they had the scrimmages against the Bills last year. You'll have the Lions this year. And, you know, it's just one of the things we'll kind of watch during the preseason here is how well, you know, not only these starters, but some of these depth guys can do in the tackling department.
Yeah. Okay, Dave, what else has kind of stood out? You know, I know, again, trying not to be too repetitive with the things that you and Alex talk about in the evenings. Other things that kind of stood out for you, maybe Anthony Ciccolo is a guy who's getting a little pre-game buzz, if you will, pre-preseason game buzz. He was a guy who got a fair bit of pre-preseason game buzz last year, and then, to be honest, really didn't shine at all. We never saw anything from him during the exhibition season, and that led to him actually being cut when they got down to 53, but obviously came back and then eventually did make the 53-man roster. He's come back. He's a little bit lighter. He's in, a different mindset. There's a lot of positive about Ciccolo. I'm not going to jump too hard on the bandwagon here for this period of time. But, again, a guy who played a lot of D-end in college, kind of, you know, understanding the position, second lap around the track, you would expect him to take a step forward. And it would seem like of the guys, you know, that whole list of guys that we have, you know, talked about who are from Zumwalt, who's really a third-year guy, down, you know, to the rookies this year, he's a guy who maybe is in the pole position to make the roster.
Help me out with some of your yelling here. Is it fever pitch or fever pitched?
Fever pitch, I think.
Okay, so you would never use fever pitched?
I don't know that I've ever heard fever pitched, no.
Okay, all right.
Doesn't mean we can't use it, though. We've invented a word or two on this podcast.
Not you, me. Well, whatever you want to call it. So far, kind of my takeaways from the reports Alex and other media members have filed. Ciccolo is having a fantastic camp, and Kevin Colbert was on Sirius XM NFL radio the other night and basically, I mean, outright praising him, saying, you know, this kid, he's relentless. You know, Mike Tomlin saying, as kind of you recapped it, these, you know, out of their second year guys, they you know, they expect a lot out of them. Second time around the track, and pointed out, you know, in so many words that Chicolo was one of those guys that's doing just that this year. And then a guy like Eli Rogers, a guy that really, you know, I've only seen on tape as far as his work at Louisville, a guy that was not eye-popping stats at Louisville, however, very, very, very consistent, between 40 and 50 catches in each of his four seasons. And then to read the quote that I think it was Ed Bouchette that had in the Post-Gazette, stating that Todd Haley claiming that this is the best slot receiver he's had since he's been in Pittsburgh. I mean, that's – I don't know how much hyperbole is there, but, man, I mean, that's another kid that you're really excited to see this year, along with Chicolo. Obviously, Grimble, who we've talked about ad nauseum throughout the offseason. Who else am I missing? A guy like L.J. Fort, you kind of look forward to kind of see what he can maybe do on special teams. Obviously, the young kids in the secondary and all. But I think Chicolo, Javon Hargrave, the rookie defensive tackle, and Eli Rogers and Grimble are probably the four guys that Steeler fans should probably have their eyes on the most during the preseason here.
Did you say Eli Rogers and then Grimble? Was that the fourth one?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm with you on all four of those. I think, you know, if you were going to rank level of surprise, honestly, I would say Hargrave is the least level of surprise. I mean, look, the kid's a third-round pick. The question was the transition from Division II to professional football. How quickly do you make it? You know, what's the transition? And if he were playing a different position, I would expect that transition to be more difficult. Not that this is going to be easy for him, but I just think in terms of raw talent, his pedigree suggests he should be the least surprising. We have talked a lot about Grimble coming in. I think the most interesting is Eli Rogers, and, you know, Todd Haley saying something like that certainly raises some eyebrows. I mean, excuse me, you know, if I'm Marcus Wheaton, I'm taking a look at that and going, what the hell? I mean, I think we talked about this a week ago, and he has been impressive. And so, you know, in terms of making the team, Hargrave's made the team. I think you can say Eli Rogers has made the team. I mean, that's pretty much a done deal as your fifth receiver. And then the question is kind of who's going to be the punt returner, what role is Rogers going to have in that, and where that's going to go. But I didn't expect that to be a done deal so quickly, but I think that is a done deal, and you can kind of you can ink him rather than pencil him into the 53.
Yeah, I don't see how that changes. You know, DeMarcus Ayers, the rookie out of Houston, missed a little bit of practice time. You would think that his development anyway would be a little bit slow, considering the long lines they have at wide receiver anyway. You know, probably destined for the practice squad, one would think. That would leave Eli Rogers as the fifth guy, and then hopefully in that, as you said, maybe he can win he'll be given, rest assured, he'll be given every opportunity to return some punts during the preseason, and you know, hopefully he does turn out to be an upgrade over one Antonio Brown, and that obviously would have make a lot of Steeler fans happy on top of it. And you know, if you needed to, you could still throw Antonio Brown back there in certain situations, almost the way they did several years ago with Santonio Holmes, right? You know, you need a spark, you throw them out there, kind of thing. So, you're right.
Let's ask the question: over or under 15 punt returns, and by that I mean fair catches and punt returns for Antonio Brown. I'm still going to take, you know, well, let's make it 16 to make it one a game. We're still going to take over.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I haven't, not being at practice and seeing what he's doing puts me handicapped in this situation, definitely. And it's not like he returned a lot of punts at Louisville anyway, you know. One would think too.
Who are you talking about here?
Eli Rogers.
Yeah. Was he at Louisville as well as Ayers was at Houston, right? So I'm saying Antonio Brown is going to get a, basically a return, go back there for – I just don't think he's going to be cut out of the return game.
Yeah, I would – what do you say, 16 total? opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't based on practice. This is based on his, you know, what he's done, you know, in his career. That the Steelers he's too much of a weapon.
Yeah, I would take the over in that.
All right, so let's talk about the running back position and Darrell Richardson. I don't know how much you've talked about him, but he's a guy who. You know, I remember him in St. Louis in 2012 backing up Steven Jackson, and I really thought kind of going forward he was going to be the guy that was carrying the mail for that team, because you were always wondering, you know, how this team was going to find the offense to match up with their defense. And they had a bit of a running game, and they had, you know, a very good defensive front even before they added Aaron Donald, but they could never get over the hump. It was just 8-8 heaven. And, you know, Darrell Richardson's a guy who we didn't talk about in the offseason when he got signed talked very little about. It was a situation with Fitzgerald Toussaint. Didn't feel like there was a spot open in the backfield. And there may not be a spot open in the backfield. But he's a guy who's made a bit of an impression, Dave.
Yeah, and he's played in or he's dressed for, I think, 24 total games dating back, you know, 2012 and 2013 season. Out of Abilene Christian, and he has, what is it, something like 170 total rushes for almost 700 yards. He's caught quite a few balls as well, too, nearly 40, I guess, and he did fumble three times in 2012 with the Rams. You know, if his pass protection's there and he can give you something on special teams to warrant getting that helmet, on Sunday, this all, of course, assumes Fitzgerald Toussaint makes the roster, and then Le'Veon Bell's forced to miss some games due to suspension. Well, then, yeah, he becomes probably the leader in the clubhouse to be that third running back, you know, behind D'Angelo Williams and Fitzgerald Toussaint. So, obviously, a guy that's going to get a lot of burn, one would think, especially in the early preseason games, and he could be your guy, and a guy that probably still, because of these new practice squad rules, still has some eligibility left. But on top of that, if he shows well, and being as he does have NFL experience already, who knows if there might be a team or two out there that might be interested in him should the Steelers waive him.
Yeah, for sure. That'll be interesting to go. Now, in terms of your thoughts or Alex's thoughts about other guys who've kind of impressed here early that you know that haven't been on the radar, are there even any more that we haven't discussed?
Well, you know, I think Gerald Hawkins, the kid out of LSU, has probably turned out to be a little bit further along as far as maybe being NFL ready than most people maybe thought. So that's going to be interesting to watch. Now, obviously, the team hopes he doesn't have to play a single snap, you know, during his rookie season. Probably not going to dress for a lot of games, one would think. But, you know, at least you have a guy like him up and coming that appears to be showing well, at least initially. I'm trying to think of maybe who else that could kind of impact this team. Matakevich, you know, he's definitely going to be somebody to watch as far as him getting down the field and getting off blocks on special teams. LJ Fort, he and LJ Fort are obviously going to be battling hard for a position during training camp. Well, a guy in that Alex just mentioned in his last couple of reports, Ricardo Matthews, who they signed during the offseason.
And that is welcome news, by the way.
Yeah, this is a guy. I mean, look, I mean, trying to upgrade from Cam Thomas isn't a huge task, right? You know, but with that said, if you can get a guy like Ricardo Matthews to come in and play, you know, 8-10 snaps a game, you know, that obviously is going to save guys like Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt to be maybe a little fresher during games. And at the same time, when you have Matthews on the field, if you don't have the kind of drop off that you had with Cam Thomas, well, then that's definitely uplifting. So the reports the last few days, to my understanding from Alex, have been positive when it comes to a guy like Ricardo Matthews.
Yeah, Dave, the Ricardo Matthews stuff would obviously be great news if they can get somewhere from, you know, 7 to 15 snaps from him each week. That obviously takes a bit of the burden off Hayward and Tuitt, and you know the level of quality goes up from Cam Thomas. So that'd be something that would be great to see. All right, Dave, we're going to have Lions practice coming up tomorrow and Wednesday, so that'll give us a lot to talk about. Looks like good news for the Lions is Eric Ebron did not tear his Achilles. He walked off from their workout today on the far side of the field, didn't speak to the media, but he's walking around no boot, no nothing. So it looks like maybe there were some erroneous reports to start things off. I just want to wrap things up a minute or two. I did not get to see the speeches from the Hall of Fame. To me, you know, generally these things are, you know, they're of all levels of quality. But I heard Marvin Harrison was effusive as he's ever been, which is, you know, the bar there is low. And I heard Kevin Green was very good.
Yeah, Kevin Green was really good. I enjoyed his. Dungy, it was good to hear him get a couple of subtle messages in that Donnie Schell belongs in the Hall of Fame as well, too. And to be honest with you, I thought Brett Favre did an outstanding job, David. Really did. This is a guy that supposedly went into this without a written speech. It was obvious he had topic notes kind of maybe scribbled down. But it was really, you know, from the hip, just the way Brett Favre played the game, too. And I was really entertained by his speech. And, you know, overall, you know, I was entertained and enjoyed the whole process there of this year's 2016 class.
Yeah, I like the from the hip analogy that you made, because when I heard that he made no notes, that's exactly what kind of I said it was apropos of Favre. And anything could happen. It could be good Brett or bad Brett. When he's doing that, but good to hear that you liked it. I heard other positive reviews as well. All right, so we'll kind of play it by ear again to see if we're back at it Wednesday, but certainly on Friday, and you know, Friday we'll have some football to talk about. Maybe try to get something done either Saturday or Monday following the Friday night game. And for those who don't know, I will be doing the post game show this year, so you can hear me throughout the Steeler Radio Network. Anywhere that's carried, including the Steelers.com or the Steelers app on your smartphone. I will be doing it in the preseason, a bit more so with Matt Williamson. Not sure if he'll be on all four games, but it'll be Charlie Batch and I. We'll be doing the regular season. So that's the update.
Yeah, we would have went a little bit longer today, but the internet out here in Las Vegas dropped out twice on us during this episode. So we're not going to push things and go any farther. We got plenty more to talk about later on in the week. You can make sure you tune in to another special edition of the Terrible Podcast Wednesday night after practice with myself and Alex Kozora. Tuesday and Wednesday will be the next two special editions of that as well. So we invite you to tune in to listen to that. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com and find that donate button up in the upper right-hand black navigational bar. David, I appreciate you being patient with the gremlins and these technology snafus today.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.